6 o'clock. You're listening to Co-op Radio.
Evening, Co-op Radio listeners. This is Conscious Living Radio, a program that explores alternative paradigms emerging in psychology, health, various sciences and philosophies that reflects the emerging new consciousness committed to advancing individual, social, and global transformation. I'm your host tonight, Linda Christensen, and we have a number of guests lined up for you. First of all, we have with us here in the studio, live tonight, David Allen Jones. He's come over from Victoria, and he's been doing Free the Heart workshops for a number of years, over 200 of these. And since 1996, he has taught over 18,000 people how they can release old habits, beliefs, and fears and create opportunities to realize their full potential. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you here tonight. I've been noticing that you have a workshop coming up in the beginning of September, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But one key thing here is you say that living with a free heart is the secret to a happy life.
Oh, absolutely. What a free heart is, it's like, you know, that moment when we first come into this world. I mean, if you've had been on the opportunity and been blessed to be a mother and give birth, or you've been there at the arrival of a new spirit in that form of that beautiful body coming into this world, the spiritual qualities that every brand new baby come into this world with, of innocence and love and joy and peace, that is the natural, inherent, divine qualities of what we were intended to live our life with. And many of us forget who we are at a very early age. And then we end up going through life kind of struggling and fighting with ourselves and fighting with those around us, and that forgetting that natural self of who and what we were intended to be. And that really is based on the essence of that which we arrived into this world with.
You know, that's so true. Sometimes when I look through pictures of different people, seeing them as children, I'm so struck by that beauty of innocence. And it does make me cry. What do you think it is that goes wrong in life? How is it that we lose that purity, that freedom and innocence, and get so messed up? What is it that all happens to us?
Well, you know, one is we have parents. No, my program is really not about blaming parents or anything like that, but when we have parents that really sometimes may not understand how fragile and how innocent we are when we arrive in this earth and in this physical body, that we have to be loved and we have to be treated with kindness and patience and tenderness and just gentleness for, you know, at least the first few years of our life. And when that does not happen, there's always that one critical moment in somebody's life where we can remember that first time that we weren't loved, or the first time that we weren't cared for, or the first time that we didn't receive compassion. Yeah. And many times, you know, it just takes that one traumatic event. And sometimes it's not as traumatic as some people might think of a traumatic event. Like, you know, obviously one's when we're sexually abused, or when we're beaten, or when we're physically hurt, or, you know, in some way, those are the real obvious. But the time that we go to our parents when we fell down, scratch our knees, and we want a hug, and instead we're told, "You're all right, don't bother me, I got a TV show I need to watch." Mm-hmm. It can be at those early moments. And what psychologist tells us is whatever happens in our first 3 or 4 years of our life, any hurts or wounds, that can determine up to 85 to 90% of our behavior for the rest of our life. Really? Unless we do something to change it.
85 to 90% of our behavior is influenced by those early years.
Absolutely.
Wow. And so in your workshop, is this sort of what you try to deal with, is sort of to get at some of those primary events in those early years and to perhaps undo the damage in some way?
Exactly. Is what I've designed is those early moments can create like a, say, a big balloon of emotion. And if that emotion is unhealthy, you know, whether it's broken trust or broken love, whatever it might be, through a series of exercises and talks and music and that, I've learned a way to get into that original hurt and, in a sense, pop it or release it. And when it releases it, it's almost like the starting of a domino effect. Because what many people do is they only work on the stuff that happened when they're 30, 40, or recently, thinking that that's the problem. Oh, it's got to be this relationship that's the problem, or it's got to be my job, or it's got to be my body. That has to be the problem, when many times it's rooted in that core early beginning.
Right.
And so once we get at the core early beginning, then all the other stuff starts to kind of fall into place and is healed a lot easier.
Okay. And so one thing I wonder about is, you know, with some of these early experiences, is it enough to just simply talk about them and try to remember them and talk about them and come to some rational understanding of them? Is that sufficient to be released from them, or do you actually have to do more than that?
My only way that you've ever really been able to heal it is you got to experience the feeling and the emotion. And the emotion can come out in the form of tears. You know, when it's great when science takes a teardrop and puts it under a microscope, that the enzymes that they can find in a teardrop is stress, anxiety, frustration, and anger.
Mm.
And
really?
So when we can release it through either tears or through our mouths in the form of some kind of emotion, that seems to be the healing point, because what is being proven from Bruce Lipton, Candace Pert, and all these leading scientists are telling us that, as Bruce Lipton studies the single cell, that it's our emotion that drives us, and it's the emotion that controls our cells, not
really?
The other way around, which is the new science.
Ah, now that's interesting. The emotions control and direct cellular activity largely.
Exactly.
Really?
And that's what the newest science, that's what Bruce Lipton is lecturing and his books are about. Candace Pert, that worked as a neuroscientist at the National Institute of Health, mm-hmm. are all discovering that that's the bond and the connection that holds our cellular and fiber and being together.
Okay.
And so if it's unhealthy emotion that's holding us together, guess what our body then becomes a reflection of?
Unhealthy physically, then.
Exactly.
So there's a definite scientific basis to this whole idea that there's a link between one's emotional being, emotional states, and one's physical body.
Exactly. I just recently, in February, I was doing a workshop in Victoria and had one of the leading neuroscientists in the United States, who happens to be working at the University of Victoria right now, and she is one of the leading experts on fetal alcohol syndrome and early diagnosis of autism. Where before they weren't able to identify it before 2 years old, she's now been able to help identify it in the first 6 months.
Really?
And when she came through my program, she says, this is the basis for all of our healing, is that you've got to get at the early development, because she's been able to study the development of the mind in infants and the brain in the last 3 months of pregnancy.
Oh, really?
And shortly thereafter, and the effects of the environment that are around the child early on are so, so important. It's
really?
Not even funny, yeah.
So this is all so fascinating, what you're all saying. For example, if a woman, while she's pregnant and is going through various emotional states of depression, anger, loneliness, sorrow, whatever, who knows, and may even be abused or anger, or never mind the physical things in terms of alcohol consumption or drug consumption, but just even those emotional states, they would have an effect on the child in some way?
Absolutely. And really, an experience such as what you just described is really what started all this work for me back when I was 22 years old. I was kind of doing a counseling thing with a 17-year-old at a youth camp in Southern California.
Yeah.
And she was 17, beautiful. You know, one of those girls you look at and you go, she's got it made.
Yeah.
You know? But her issue, as I came to find out over the week of the camp, was that she never felt wanted in this world. Never felt wanted. And so I did a pretty simple technique, is just close your eyes. I want you to tell me the first time you've never felt wanted. And she goes back and tells me a time when she was about 7. And it brought up a little of emotion with her. And then she went back to when she was about 3, brought up a little more emotion. And I could tell something inside of me said, that's not it.
Really?
I said, I want you to just close your eyes, go back as far as you can remember.
Yeah.
Close her eyes, and all of a sudden the tears just start pouring. And that's when you can tell this person is in that big balloon of emotion, so to say.
Okay.
And she says, I said, tell me what you're feeling, seeing, whatever it is. She says, I'm in my mother's womb, and she's attempting to strangle me from the outside.
Really?
And I'm 22, and that's kind of my response. Really? How can that be possible? You know? But, of course, when this person's in the middle of emotion, I knew enough, you don't make fun, don't laugh.
Yeah.
And we completed it real nice. We did a little prayer work with her, some affirmations say. But when we finished, I said, when you go home after the camp's over, I want you to find out and ask your mother about it. Uh-huh. And then call me. About 5 days later, she calls me up, and she says, you won't believe it. She says, I went home, asked my mother about the situation, told her what I remember, and she said when she brought it up, her mother's face just went ashen. Mm-hmm. She said she had to sit down, and she says, oh, my God. She says, what happened is it was the 8th month of my pregnancy with you, and it was like midnight, and I was just feeling so down and so depressed, and I didn't know what to do. And the story is the mother, this was an unwanted pregnancy, kind of a reunion with a high school lover for one night kind of thing. She was on welfare. She already had 6 kids, and the last thing she needed was another child to take care of. Yeah. And she says, in the darkest, deepest moments of my despair, I did try to physically strangle you from the outside.
Really?
She was in her 8th month of pregnancy, and so what that girl was born into was the feeling of unwantedness.
Oh, isn't that... Oh, that's really, really...
And so that's been my turning point. That was really one of... I never let go of that story, and I have found so many people that have come into this world as a twin, and the twin died early on, and they always feel like a part of them is missing. Well, where does that energy go? It gets etched into and locked into and anchored into that subconscious mind. Because we sometimes overlook that our subconscious mind remembers everything that we've ever seen, heard, tasted, smelled, or felt from the moment we're born and even perhaps the last 3 months of being in the womb.
Right. So then to think here in terms of emotions as linked in somehow or can be understood in terms of energy that would get imprinted into a person's very being somehow, even at the cellular level, and then from there it just plays itself out. And even if you aren't even consciously aware of it or even purposely receiving it, it still kind of has its imprint on you whether you like it or not or want it or not.
Exactly. And the greater that imprint, the more traumatic. And really, this is the basis of a post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, when you're in a foxhole and a bomb goes off and it kills 5 of your people next to you and you lose your leg, which is a victim that a former military man that I had through one of my workshops, that leaves a huge indent in your mind.
Yeah.
When you're sexually abused at 2 years old, that leaves a huge pregnancy imprint in one's mind, and that's what we're designed until that stuff gets healed. That's why we'll struggle in relationship. That's why we'll struggle financially. That's why we struggle with our body. That's why we struggle in friendships, and usually we end up in an unhealthy work environment, and we just can't figure it out. We think it's got to be all these things out here, so we look at changing our relationships, changing our job, changing where we live, and all that, thinking that we can fix it from the outside in, and we can't.
Right. Those are all Band-Aids just covering up the symptoms of a much deeper issue. And I think the impression I have is probably in your workshop, and what a lot of people are doing these days is really getting at the core source of a lot of these issues and problems that I suspect a lot of mainstream therapy, psychology, medicine, forgive me, but I think a lot of mainstream professionals in this area of counseling or whatever probably wouldn't be able to address.
No, you can't do it in a 50-minute session.
Yeah.
You really need, we need 25 hours. Does 25 hours guarantee your entire life's going to be changed? There's no way. There isn't a workshop in the world that changes anybody's entire life in 25 hours.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of like if you haven't been to the gym, and you decide you're going to go to the gym, you can go work out all you want for 25 hours. Is that going to keep you in shape for the rest of your life or get you back into shape forever? No. And the mind is really a mental gym, and it's about going in and working on it and getting it back in shape. But because we can't see it, we can't grasp it, we can't get a hold of it, we don't realize and understand the entire significance and the importance of having a sharp mind that is in shape, that is capable of loving.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people are listening right now that want to love their child before they go to bed, and the child wants more than anything for the parent to say, I love you and I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
But something stops them and keeps them on the couch in front of the TV.
Right.
And they're okay with allowing their child to go to bed night after night, month after month, year after year, not feeling loved.
Mm-hmm.
When a person leaves a home and they don't feel loved, they do one of two things. Is they go out into the world and they either prove to the world that they're not lovable. So they become so difficult to be around that it's hard to tolerate them.
Uh-huh.
And it makes it extremely impossible to be around them. But yet they'll get in relationships, and the person that gets stuck with them, so to say, is trying to do their very best to love them and gives of themselves and gives and gives and thinks the more they love them, it'll make them better.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't. Or we'll go out into the world and do anything to be loved. Even if that means giving up our body, giving up our self-esteem, giving up our self-worth, will do anything to be loved. If that means waiting on somebody hand and foot, over and over and over, taking somebody else's anger and hurt and upset, we'll do it because we want to be loved.
Right.
Love is such a huge, powerful force in this universe, yeah. And it can be used negatively or positively.
Right. That's probably the core need we all have, isn't it? That sense of to be truly, truly loved. Now, I understand, David, you've done work in the prisons as well, and also with some women who are street workers in Victoria, and you're having quite some success here in this type of program that you offer.
Right.
Can you tell us a bit about what you do there?
The prison work is as dear to my heart as anything. For the last about 13 years, I've been going into prisons on a volunteer basis in the States. And I work with anywhere between 100 and 250 inmates at a time that come entirely voluntarily. Mm-hmm. And they're multiple murderers, rapists, burglars, you name it, white-collar, blue-collar crime, everything. And what I found is that I'm kind of tired of the recidivism rate in the country. And the United States spends over $200 billion a year on people in prison, on probation, and on parole. The bill is $200 billion for that involves a little over 7.2 million people. And I kind of want to do my little thing, cut down on the recidivism rate.
Yes.
And there is very little rehabilitation work that is done. And the truth is they are just starving. And the lack for love, for kindness and tenderness, because they're being punished. And 90% of the people that are in prison in North America, including Canada, are going to get out. Now, when they get out, would you want them to have a better understanding of love and compassion and forgiveness, or would you like them get out like they are right now, where they come out harder than when they went in?
Yeah.
I am totally for if you do the crime, you do the time. It's not about like I'm trying to change it.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, these people are going to get out. Let's make them better when they come out,
right,
instead of a worse human being. Because I'd rather take $200 billion and spend it on homeless, or spend it on children and provide insurance for them in the States or whatever that might mean.
Yeah, medical insurance.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So it's been absolutely remarkable. We've applied for a grant that I'm going to find out on September 1st to be funded by the National Institute of Health, and I have from a very good word from the author of the grant that we have a very, very good chance of receiving it, and I'll know September 1st.
Oh, that is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish you the best of luck. This is really what's needed,
are
programs like this that can really actually do something to cure and get at the problems
exactly. That
we are facing. So, David, I understand you have a workshop coming up here in Vancouver. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yep. It's going to be at the Croatian Cultural Center,
okay. And
it's September 7th through the 9th, and it's called Free the Heart.
Uh-huh.
And if you go to the Common Ground issue and look in the inside of the back page, there's our full page ad on it. And you can also go to our webpage, freetheheart.com, and find out more about it. But it's just it's a workshop that is geared towards everybody. And a lot of people say, I don't need to go work on myself. The first person that says that is you need to come.
Yeah.
And it's for anybody. It's not just for people that feel like they're struggling. I haven't found a person that has gone through the workshop that does not receive some benefit in some way. It's going to make your relationship better with either your partner, your children, or at work. It's going to make you feel better about yourself no matter how good you feel at the moment.
Yeah.
It is absolutely guaranteed to shift. And the promise I always give everyone is that you're going to feel different than you do when you walk in the door on Friday night. I guarantee you'll feel better on Sunday night at least a little bit. And most people walk out feeling a lot better.
Yeah.
And so we'd love to have as many people show up as possible.
Well, that's great. That's great. Again, I'll just restate that. September 7th to 9th, that's Friday night and Saturday and Sunday at the Croatian Cultural Center, which is at 3250 Commercial Drive. And for information about this, they can check out the website www.freetheheart.com. freetheheart.com. And with us, we had David Allen Jones as our guest, telling us about his Freeing the Heart workshop, as well as some of the work he does. Thank you very much, David. Enjoyed it very much. Hopefully we can have you again.
Well, thank you, Linda. It was a pleasure being with you.
Very welcome. All right, stay tuned. We have another guest coming up after a little bit of a break, Dr. Rick Jarrow. This is CFRO, Co-op Radio, FM 102.7, Conscious Living Radio. Thank you.
Thank you.
I
Welcome back again to Conscious Living Radio. This is your host, Linda Christensen, tonight. And we now have as our next guest, Dr. Rick Jarrow, who is an associate professor of religious studies at Vassar College, New York. And besides having an academic career in this arena, and I understand he published a work translating a Hindu text, a scripture, he has also done a great deal of work in the area of providing workshops in developing and discovering careers and professions that you could love. And he's written various books, Creating the Work You Love, The Advanced Manifestation Program, The Ultimate Anti-Career Guide. He has his website, www.anticareer.com, and he's provided various workshops along these lines throughout North America and Germany, Italy, and Eastern Europe. And he is presently at Hollyhock doing a workshop based on his latest book, The Alchemy of Abundance. And so we have Rick on the air, I hope. Rick, are you there?
I'm here, Linda. Hi there.
Hi. Good to have you. I'm so glad this could work out.
Yeah, me too.
Good. So I understand you are out there in Hollyhock. Hopefully you're having a wonderful day out there as we are here in Vancouver. I am curious about this whole concept of abundance. And I was wondering, since your background is in religious studies and having done a bit of work in comparative religion, do you think that there's any kind of, or I'd like for you to explain perhaps what you think could be perhaps the connection or link between the more traditional spiritual quest for enlightenment with what many are searching for today in terms of an abundant and fulfilling life?
Oh, that's a small question.
I know. I like being wondering.
Well, you know, abundance is a word that's kind of like the word God. It's been abused so much that it's hard to use it, but you can't get away from it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, abundance is really about, I mean, enlightenment is ultimate fulfillment. And, you know, forever fulfillment. And abundance participates in that. Abundance is our birthright. It's our heritage. It's our true nature. So you could use other words like openness, freedom, trust. I often define abundance as the very deep sense that you are loved.
Oh, really? Isn't that interesting? That so fits in with our previous guest talking about the core need we have for being loved, mm-hmm. and our perpetual search for it in life in so many ways. Mm-hmm. Do you think that sense then of abundance is a sense of completeness of being because of being loved, that it brings you this sense of completeness somehow?
Well, you know, I would want to say yes, but I'd be a little bit careful with that, because once you claim completeness, you've drawn a circle around yourself.
Mm.
So I'd like to say full aliveness.
Ah, full aliveness.
And the ability to really negotiate anything that happens in your life. I think the misunderstanding, the shallow understanding of abundance is this kind of mindless cosmic optimism that doesn't really recognize or doesn't want to recognize life as it is. So the abundance I'm talking about, you know, includes imperfection, includes suffering, includes some of the very harsh realities that we experience every day.
Yeah.
But within that and beyond that at the same time, you are able to expand outward. On a deepest level, abundance is compassion, because you're overflowing as opposed to needing.
Okay. All right. So do you think in terms of what's quite popular out there these days in terms of the law of attraction and, you know, creating whatever you want in life,
I think it's
a little bit shallow.
A little bit. It's a bunch of hooey, you know. It's the latest. It's kind of the latest spiritual scam.
Yeah.
Not that these things don't have a truth to them,
mm-hmm.
you know, but there's a very, you know, definite truth to the law of attraction. But it's not that you can just one day consciously decide to change thousands of years of conditioning and I'm only going to think about this and not about this. This is just another effort of the ego to kind of aggrandize itself and mm-hmm. avoid suffering.
So
it's not that these things are necessarily wrong, but they are presented in a very kind of minuscule way.
Right, yeah. You're not getting the whole story here, really,
exactly.
Are you? Yeah. I find that sometimes it can be a form of escapism and denial of, as you're saying, some of the harsh realities of life.
Well, I like to look at it as like the what I call the alchemy of abundance is bringing together two polarities. One side is the ability to truly love what is, whatever it is, you know, the weather, whatever the weather is, whatever the story is, whatever your life is, to truly love it, to truly be open to it. On the other side, you know, if we just loved what is but didn't go toward what could be, we'd still have slavery, women wouldn't have the vote, you know, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, we want to love what is. On the other hand, we want to be able to focus on what can be. And if you can do these things at once, then you're not coming from a sense of lack. You're not coming from this craving to make it better, but you're coming from a recognition of human potential and possibility, and that is the alchemy of abundance.
Mm. Now, to pick that up a little bit here, what I kind of think of when you say present these two polarities in terms of accepting and loving what is it that when we embrace life, fully embrace it, that that's when we open our being and engage and connect with, you know, the universe, the source of life itself, that is ultimately a creative kind of dynamic principle there, that we then connect with it and then can kind of activate that to create greater possibilities of further evolution and growth.
Sounds good to me. Yeah.
You know, that's sort of how that it takes as sort of that's your first step, is to have that kind of connection, bonding through accepting and loving what is.
Well, yeah, and then what the question that comes in is, how do I connect?
Yeah.
And I like to look at two things. The first thing I say, look what's manifest. That to have the true vision of what's going on around you, you know, what's in your bank account, you know, what's in your refrigerator, what's in your house, to look at this. And notice what I did not say. I didn't say, look what I created.
Mm.
Putting the onus on the human being for being the creator of everything, to me, is a real hubris. I had a student at Vassar where I teach. When she was 15 years old, she was diagnosed with leukemia.
Yeah.
And she had a great doctor, because the first thing he told her was, I want you to understand, this is not your fault.
Mm-hmm.
If you are fully conscious, then you could take all the credit. But you just say, look what's manifested. That's step one. But step two, you're talking about connection, and to me, this is what's really crucial. Whatever is manifested, can we allow ourselves to feel it fully?
Okay.
Whatever it is, can we feel it so deeply that the response is going to be the healed vision, not just another reaction?
Uh-huh.
And that's the third step. The healed vision of what can be comes out of the embrace of what is through the full feeling, and that gives you the healed vision of possibility.
Okay. And that's why you call it alchemy, because
exactly.
Alchemy has that transformative healing process that's visionary coming out of it. That makes a lot of sense to me. Now, one thing, I read your book just the past few days here.
Which one?
The Alchemy of Abundance.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. And I just want to pull out a quote here. In the very beginning, one thing that caught me, you say that the quality of your attention is the genuine measure of abundance, and it's your greatest capital asset in any situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, could you comment on that?
Yeah, you know, that's again, why this, you know, if you... Some of this stuff, you know, thinking of abundance as material wealth is just shallow. It's never working. You know, money can never buy you love. We knew that, you know, forever. So the real wealth is the quality of your attention, because that is what you possess. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, the contents of your consciousness is the quality of your attention. And your attention is so valuable that everybody wants it. The media wants it, your friends want it, your kids want it, everybody wants a piece of your attention.
Mm.
And the great transformation, the great moment in a conscious human life is when a human being makes a decision to focus their attention on what's important to them instead of having other forces dictate it.
Okay. You know, I wish you were here. No, there's just, it's so profound what you're all saying here, and I think this is so important. Now, how would you define attention?
I would define attention as, I define it as a quality of your consciousness. It's what you're experiencing. It's your experience. But one way to look at it is that there are forces that are constantly either flirting with our attention, attracting our attention, or demanding our attention.
Mm.
And according to how we respond to that, then those forces will respond in kind. So, for example, in my country, the levees in New Orleans, it was brought to the attention of the municipality that those levees were not built well enough to withstand the number 5 hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
But they let it go. And when you let something go that's attracting your attention and don't deal with it, at some point it commands your attention, and that's the hurricane.
And just like that bridge that collapsed as well, same thing.
So mm-hmm. Jung had a great quote on this. He said, "What is not met by consciousness will be met by fate."
Ha. Huh. Yes, indeed.
So basically, indeed. We're trying to harness the power of our attention, take it away from the media, take it away from all the stuff that's occupying our mind, and be kind of powerful enough to decide for ourselves what's important now, where do I want to put my focus, where do I want to offer my energy to this great gift of life that I've been given. You know, here's a great chance. What do I want to do with it?
Yes, indeed. Now, to pick up another quote of yours, you say that we need to align our will with the universe.
This word alignment is really crucial. I define alignment as being in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And so alignment is not mindless surrender, but neither is it titanic egoism. It's kind of like surfing with life, being in your right place at your right time, feeling out the places that you need you and the places where you need to be. Can you see those places coming together?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's a more active, creative way of being in harmony with everything and everyone.
And that, of course, takes attention, takes consciousness to know if you're in the right place at the right time and to get in the right place at the right time.
And it takes kind of an honest inventory of your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Is this feeling right for me? Am I willing to follow my heart if it's not?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Real integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your workshop that you're doing out there in Hollyhock, I noticed that one aspect of it involves reading the living book of nature to see where your strengths lie, what doors may be open, and how you can best meet the challenges you face.
Right.
Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about that in terms of what that involves in terms of reading the living book of nature?
Okay. Well, this gets back to the alchemy issue. The question we ask is like, what is alchemy and where is its province? And if we follow Jung and say that it's not just like the physical effort to make gold out of base metal, but if it's a metaphor for our process of life, for what's happening around us, then the question is, where is the stuff that we're working with? And the answer is, it's everything and everywhere. So the living book of nature is, in other words, everything in our life, every aspect of our life is part of our unfoldment of consciousness. And one place in particular that is important here are the images that spontaneously arise from our psyche, whether they be in dreams, meditation, whenever and wherever. You know, Trungpa Rinpoche, the Tibetan teacher of Donna Boulder, once called alchemy the Tantra of the West.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tantra uses, you know, mandalas and images, but the idea is we want to use our own images. So what I've done in the Alchemy of Abundance to make it easier to kind of key into the Book of Nature, I've divided it through the 12 houses of the zodiac, just as a way of dealing with your stuff. So looking at your body, looking at your money, looking at your schedule, looking at your home, looking at your, you know, creativity, so on and so forth. And really working with what the world is giving you, what is attracting your attention, what's coming into your life, mm-hmm. and how can you deal with it?
Mm-hmm.
And the way we deal with it is say, look what's manifested. 2, really feel it deeply. And 3, the important thing is to develop a healed vision of whatever you're working on. So instead of saying I'm ill, you develop a healed vision of what it's like to be healthy. So the imbalance of so-called disease becomes the fuel to bring you toward health.
And really raises you up then to even a higher level than you were before, really.
Exactly.
I mean, it's all a part of the larger dynamic, I would say, in terms of just growth and further evolution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, this is your latest book, The Alchemy of Abundance. It's quite recent. I haven't had a chance yet to do the CD that's with it in terms of the visualizations. And I understand they kind of work through all of these different, as you say, the houses of the zodiac is sort of what you're using as a model here to work with. What is sort of the end result then? I mean, I guess the end result is this healing vision that you can then come up with in terms of every area of your life.
Yeah, and I one of the things I've kind of learned is to like release our Zeus complex and try not to do everything.
But take, you're talking to the right person here. That's what I'm always trying to do.
Take a couple areas of your life that are really demanding your attention right now. Money, for example, relationship, vocation, whatever they may be. And it allows you to go into them very deeply. And once you have the healed vision, then you're working toward building that vision in your life. You're calling it in. And everything you do, every thought you think, every act you take is kind of building the temple of beauty. It's building the potential for that healed vision, and it's taking you toward it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the idea is the very stuff of our life, i.e. the book of nature, is the stuff that's going to help us get beyond the obstacles and get into that state of being that we've all touched at one time or another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. That's wonderful. So it reminds me a little bit of Viktor Frankl's work and some, I forget some quote of his I've read in terms of how life itself always comes before you but presents you with the questions.
Yep.
And how what you do and choose to do and how conscious you are is sort of your response, your answer to the questions that life poses you.
Yeah, and I think Viktor Frankl is a really good example because here's a man who suffered tremendously and that suffering turned into the depth of soul.
Yes, as he was in the concentration camps under the Nazis. Yeah,
that's why the superficial law of attraction business, the idea is, okay, I don't want to suffer, I want to be happy. But we can't always choose our circumstances.
Right.
And so the deeper level of abundance is to take what life brings you and open to it into a healed vision wherever you are.
Yes. Yes. So it's really, it's a work of transforming, taking what's grist for the mill and in the sort of transformative process to create the best and the greatest out of whatever is, but yet accepting what is.
Yes, and therefore for me, the best and the greatest, the way I like to see that is as an offering. That we are here to offer ourselves.
Yeah.
I think William Blake put it most beautifully. He said, we are put on earth a little space until we learn to bear the beams of love.
Wow. Now that is a beautiful quote. Yes, indeed. Well, I understand that we are very privileged to have you coming here to Vancouver on Sunday.
Oh, you know about that. Good.
Yes.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm planning on being there, but I won't be able to stay because I have to run off for a tennis tournament. But,
okay.
But you will be speaking this Sunday at 11 a.m. here in Vancouver at the Center for Dynamic Living, which is a great place that meets at the Planetarium, the Vancouver Planetarium. There at the McMillan Space Center. And you will be the guest speaker this morning, Sunday at 11 a.m.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think Vancouver is one of the most interesting, powerful cities in the world.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Because there's a multicultural fusion and a fusion with nature that you see very rarely. And so I'm really excited to just to be there, you know, and to hang out with people.
Oh, that's great. Well, we're happy to have you.
Okay.
Yeah. So thank you so much,
thank you,
Rick Jarrell. We sure enjoyed this little conversation, and I look forward to seeing you on Sunday. And if people want to check out anything that you do, I guess the main website for you is www.anticareer.com.
That's right. And they could reach my blog through there. We have a lot of stuff going on.
Good, good. Thanks again, Rick, and have a wonderful week out there at Hollyhock. Okay, bye-bye. Well, stay tuned, everyone. This is Living Conscious Radio. We have another guest coming up shortly after the break. Thank you. Welcome back again to Conscious Living Radio at Co-op Radio CFRO 102.7 FM. And I'm your host, Linda Christensen. And we have next here in our studio, live as guests, Paul Scott with his wife, Kathy.
Hello, Linda.
Hi.
Hi, Linda.
Hi. So good to have you both here. Now, Paul is a transpersonal clinical therapist. He underwent a three-year program of training at Clear Mind International Institute, as well as having done further training in England, Ireland, and Sweden. He also has done programs at Rhodes College and is a counselor and coach. Also completed a mastery program with Context Associates. He has an extremely interesting bio in terms of having done a variety of things, from having been a construction worker, top real estate agent, sales manager for a nutritional products company. He's a ballroom dance teacher, has been a corrections officer.
You see why I'm married, don't you?
Yeah, very interesting.
I'm having
man.
An identity crisis.
Who am I?
Well, because of this background, both the training and all the experiences he's had, he's well-equipped to counsel and coach people from all walks of life and has been doing so for over 30 years. And he is with us here tonight, and I would like to first of all ask you, what is it that a transpersonal therapist does?
Good question. Most people go, what does transpersonal mean?
Yeah.
So I'm going, well, really, we're looking beyond just the physical. We're calling in a lot of other dimensions into the therapeutic process.
Okay.
So it's a larger model than the clinical model.
All right. So that's, and I understand that it includes then a bit more of a spiritual approach to understanding the counseling process and healing of sorts.
Absolutely. Because, you know, what I find is when people can get to that place that's larger than the story, right?
Okay.
Larger than the story that they're telling themselves, then they can view it from a higher perspective, and from that place it's not so difficult.
Okay.
You know, and something else new can emerge from there.
So in other words, sometimes the little dramas and the stories that we sort of create in terms of, oh, poor me, you know, I'm a victim of this and that and whatever, and that becomes in our prison that we're locked into. And if we can then rise above that to put that into bigger context,
right. That
then can allow us to be freed from that smaller little psychological prison, I guess, we've been living under.
Absolutely. It's like Einstein said, there was a reporter said to Einstein, you know, what's the most important question a person could ask?
Yeah.
And he said, is the universe friendly or not?
Uh-huh.
And that will shape our whole life experience, how we look at it. So if I look at it as it's conspiring against or for my good, and if I look at it from a transpersonal point of view, I'll go, you know, there is a loving force, and I'm loved, and I'm connected. And so that everything happens in my life in that context. So it's more I'm curious than to go, wow, what's this for? You know, and what new thing can emerge in my life as a result of this?
Yes,
you know,
yes.
It's a whole different kind of approach.
Gives right. a little peace of mind.
Yeah.
A smidgen for a minute sometimes, Linda. Yeah. You know, you get a minute of peace of mind. It's a good feeling.
Yeah.
No, or as Buddha said, you know, a tranquil mind is not a small gift.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now, I have here your mission statement, and I'd like to read it if I could.
Sure.
Because I liked
That'd be
it.
Great. Cool.
And it's like, oh, I agree with this. And so this is Paul speaking here, all right? This is what he had written one time. I once stood up in a workshop and shouted, how hard can it be to be me? Everyone laughed, but it was true that I hadn't got a clue of who I was. Everyone could see my inner beauty but me. It has been a hard-fought journey of self-discovery to be more of who I truly am and less of an imitation of someone else. I believe it's only when we discover and claim our own inner beauty and unique authentic expression that we can finally give way to our own greatness and experience the true satisfaction and success that finding our soul's destiny brings. I believe that each one and every one of us has our own innate talents and gifts unique to us that have been forged from our own personal struggles and life journeys. And it's our life purpose to discover these gifts and talents and find where we can best serve others. When we do this, the joy we experience in sharing and expressing them is the greatest legacy that we can leave. Mm. And I'm dedicated to assisting each and every person who wants to more fully discover, express, and fulfill their unique purpose on this planet. Amen.
Amen.
Well read, too.
That's a great mission. That's a great mission to have. So why is it that we have always this problem of being ourselves?
Well, you know, I think it's all the messages we get right from growing up. You know, we're always told, you know, you do this way, you don't do that. There's all the rules. You're trying to fit in. You're wondering how you're going to get accepted in your peer group, in your family. And so there's this whole system of rules that we grow up in. And I think each event that happens within that system, we make it mean something. So we then develop a whole belief system around, oh, you know, I just did something that annoyed my dad or my mom here, and there's sort of like a human tendency to want to go, well, what did I do wrong? You know, this place in us that seems to want to go to the guilt button and go, you know, that part of me is not being accepted for whatever reasons in this system or in this event right now, so I'm thinking I better cover it up, and I'll mask it over with something that will be more acceptable. And will get me the goodies from all the people around me, and I'll feel more successful. And I think it's just like the series of these masks that we cover up the places that we feel are unlovable or where we feel wounded, you know, in our life. So we just keep masking and masking and masking to a point where we lose our authenticity. And I become my mask. I think, well, here's this mask. It's lovable. I'm not.
Right.
You know, and it's an image that I polish up, I build, I manicure, you know.
Lots of makeup polish, on.
Yeah, you know, makeup on it. And that's what I present to the world, because my message underneath in a deeper place is who I truly am is not lovable.
You don't even know you're wearing it after a while. It's part of your face, like the man with the iron mask, right?
Right, yeah. You so identify with that false self, in a sense, that you've totally lost connection. You don't even know anymore who you are.
The one that's lovable is the false self. And so then you get, how do I find out what is truly lovable? It takes a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you were reading that, Linda, the mission statement, because that was a fair number of years ago that I had that revelation when I stood up and went, I don't know who I am, you know. I've been so in mass for so long, I have no idea who Paul is anymore. And it was perplexing, but that was the start of something. Mm. That was the start of me going, wow, well, if that's not who I am, who am I? You know, and it was then I went inward. I wasn't so much on the outward process. Now I'm going in and I'm going, who is Paul anyway? You know, it was quite a few years later, a lot of processes happened, and I actually had a real solid experience of this mask that I had been wearing and how incredibly painful it was to actually take it off, really. I remember it was kind of gleaming in the corner, inviting me, come wear me, Paul. You'll be safe if you wear me, you know. And it was amazing. I was like, I couldn't believe it when I had this experience. And I thought, man, I've been living behind that. I've been really like the man in the iron mask. Mm-hmm. No wonder I didn't know who I was, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was actually quite a vulnerable place to be in. It was sort of like I was birthed on the Serengeti and I was waiting for the lions to come, you know. Like, if I really show up here, you know, is there a place for me? Can I be safe? Will I be loved, accepted?
Yeah.
And actually, it was amazing, because in that point in my life, I found out how actually resilient that place is. And that place is the place in me that connects to the wonder, connects to people, connects to vision, connects to the mystery and the just life.
Joy.
It's juicy. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden life got bright and had meaning. You know?
And it seems that you have used those discovered new features and created living vision. And it would be beautiful if you could, both of you could tell us more about the retreat. We have only 5 minutes left of the show.
Yeah, that was Andrew Resmer interfering here. Intervening, I should say. I just wasn't looking at the time here. You are doing this retreat coming up, Living Visions Retreat coming up the end of September, 28th to 30th. Can you tell us about that, what that's all about?
Sure, Kathy's actually put something down on paper here.
Doing a little stream of consciousness outside thinking, well, what if Linda says, what are all these presenters about and what happens? And I was looking at it and thinking, you know, each presenter brings the spirit of their community. And it's like a convergence of so many like-minded yet uniquely individual presenters bringing the energy and spirit of their lives and all of the things that they have inspired in themselves and in others. And it creates a very powerful intention. And the flow of that energy is orchestrated, you know, ever so slightly by Paul, but it's largely left to create what spontaneously grows from it. And there is a mystery to this community gathering that no one would want to define, because that definition could limit or restrict its form. And all we know is that it's always amazing.
And you've been doing this a few years now, right, or something?
Yeah, this is actually our fifth one.
Okay. You know. And what kind of people are the presenters here? Can you tell us just a little bit or give people a bit of an idea as to what kind of people are here and
absolutely
what sort of things will be going on?
There's visionaries, there's healers, there's artists. So we have a wide variety of people coming from the arts in many, many forms.
Yeah, some pretty cool kind of world music and primal dancing and drumming. And
This year we're talking about having a rhythm in the round, you know, and it would actually be a combination of Pepe and Jerry DeVoyne and Pepe Danza.
So, yeah, Pepe Danza, yeah.
And they do just
sacred chants and whatnot.
They're incredible musicians, right? And really,
we actually had them in the studio a few months ago, yes.
Beautiful guys, you know. Mm-hmm. There's so many people. There's a lot of dance energy there this year. There's sacred dancers. There's the spiritual dancers. There's also Jackie Kumbi is an African dancer, but she's also a wisdom teacher as well. And we have Brock Tully and he's involved in Kind Acts. It's another great community out there. And then there's Yamaya. And Carla Reig is doing humor. We have a yoga laughter workshop. We'll actually have healing sessions for people that want like a 20-minute treatment in anything from Reiki to body massage to there's the tapping, new tapping, psychology,
emotional release. Yeah.
Very cool. And there'll be a few people doing that as well.
And then there's Little Woo. And if you've never seen or heard or whatever of Little Woo, you must come for just that.
I know. I saw her do some pretty
she's
wild
amazing.
Dancing. Yeah.
There's so many. I mean, Theda's a spontaneous singer. She really takes what's in the room and sings it. Mm-hmm. I could just go on and on about how many of the people are here. Minka DeVos ran Common Ground. Silent Ground for like 20 years. And she's super gifted and talented. I'm just looking at the co-creation possibilities this weekend and what's happening out there. Like there was one lady came and she had one of the flyers and it flew onto her lap and she felt, you know, I'm being drawn somewhere. And she said, oh, I guess I'm going to the retreat. It just like fell. So it's calling a lot of people. And I think something new is emerging from community today. Mm-hmm. I think community is the emergence, rather than a singular leader, it's communities of people coming together.
From the people themselves.
It's the people themselves. Mm-hmm. And what we're calling forward here is vision and to give the wings to the community and the people to bring it out into their lives. So it's very practical. Mm-hmm. We've got the Hug Squad that just came out of it.
Oh, really?
And they were hugging people at Lonsdale.
Oh, they came out of that?
Oh, really?
Because I bumped into them once at Granville Island Market, you know, going around saying, oh, sure, I love a hug, you know. Ah, I didn't know that they came out of that.
It was awesome. There was a little, that's like great. 20, 30 kids joined us and they were hugging people.
Oh, awesome.
And we had the Vision of Hope and that was for Dr. Chandra in India and that raised a ton of money. And they had 500 people for it. So there's people written CDs. And it could be as small as just, you know, getting an insight into what could bring you happiness in your life. So we're really about going in intentionally listening to what's there.
And we have fun, too. There's fun. There's laughter. There's dancing. There's moments of silence where you can feel whatever that is between that and that in the silence that counts. And then we just, you know, have a great, great time.
Wow, that sounds awesome. Well, thank you so much, Paul and Kathy Scott, for joining us in the studio. This is coming up September 28th, 29th, and 30th, a weekend, Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. And for more information on this, check www.livingvision.ca. Right? Mm-hmm. Livingvision.ca.
Yeah, livingvision.ca.
If you want more information, it's wonderful. I'm going to be there myself.
Yay!
And thank you for joining us to Conscious Living Radio. And join us next week as we're going to talk about relationships next Wednesday at 6 p.m. at Co-op Radio.
Juicy.
Good night, and I was Linda Christensen.